From NPR News, I'm Tony Cox. Today we continue with day three of our roundtable discussion on identity in the United States. Who we are is not just a matter of culture, race, or ethnicity. Even before the legal barriers to interracial marriage and other relationships were torn down, people of vastly different backgrounds came together in love, sex, and romance. Increasingly, the children of this generation have begun to take on the physical characteristics of a more socially liberal and multicultural society. In fact, in the 2000 census, many respondents identified themselves as a mixture of races and ethnic backgrounds. Today, we discuss the role of sex and interracial relationships in determining who we are. Our panelists include Richard Rodriguez in San Francisco, author of a three-volume memoir about being Mexican-American. His latest book is titled Brown. Ara Han in Boston, co-editor of Asian American X, a collection of personal stories from young Asian Americans. Russell Means here in Los Angeles, a veteran actor and activist best known as a leader of the American Indian takeover of Wounded Knee on the Sioux Reservation in 1973. And Deborah Dickerson in Albany, New York, a former U.S. News and World Report editor and author of The End of Blackness. Deborah says sex has always been a factor in the politics of race and identity.
Where the rubber meets the road in cross-cultural relationships is, of course, sex. And that's always happened whenever cultures have come into contact with each other, you know, often by force, often by economics, and later on by love and just human lust. And that's just not a stoppable force. You can be for it, you can be against it. It's just not something that can be stopped. I write about race primarily, and when I'm out on the road, I get these people who come up and say how much they love me, love me, love me. And then I get an email from this person who just found out that my husband is white and my two children are biracial and they look white at this point. And so then I'll get denounced by the same person, you know, because in their mind, I can't speak on race. I can't speak as a black person. You know, what can I speak as a white person? Well, no, I can't speak, apparently.
You raise another
point. I have a white husband.
You raise another interesting point, Deborah. I want to pursue it a little bit further and bring Ara into it as well, which is this, that it's okay to have interracial relationship or intercultural relationship, but at a distance. And as soon as it permeates your family or your immediate nuclear world, then it's a different story. Do you find that to be the case, Ara?
Yes, and I speak from personal experience. When I dated a Chinese guy when I was in high school, my mom actually had a problem with that because within Asian America, it turns out, there are different cultures and you tend to not mix because, you know, A, you don't speak the same language, B, you don't hail from the same country, C, you don't eat the same food, and da-da-da-da-da-da.
Now, we should say you're Korean, right? You're Korean, correct?
Yes, okay. I'm Korean-American.
All right, go on.
And the second guy I dated happened to be African-American and Korean. And as a result of some genetic consequence, he happened to look more black than Korean. And in her mind, my mother was very comfortable with this because, well, hey, half of him is Korean. But as it played out, he sent me a photograph, and when I showed it to her, she was horrified because there he was. He looked black, and she just couldn't come to terms with it. The last guy I dated was white, and it turned out that she was equally uncomfortable with that, but for different reasons. And, you know, as a result of my dating adventures, we faced this race issue, this interracial dating issue in my family several times. And I find that, yes, to some extent, it's true that at a distance and in the abstract, it doesn't seem bad to have mixed race relationships. But then when it hits home, I think you're forced to really challenge, well, now, if you're comfortable with having a white-black couple, say, are you comfortable having your own daughter dating somebody who's not of your race and, furthermore, who is not of your ethnic culture? And it's coming to terms with that. That I think has made my family grow in that you have to think about, well, what matters? Does it really, is it a deal breaker that this person that my daughter is dating is of a different race than our family or of a different culture? And I think each time we've come away from the experience, fortunately, that race is not the salient factor in a dating relationship. It's the relationship itself. But I know that my family does not speak to the experience of every intercultural dating dating couple.
Let me bring Russell Means in on this, because I'd like to know what you think, because there have been, you know, there's historical issues going back a long time with regard to the Native American community and mixing with the white man. And where is that now, and how do you see it, both personally and culturally?
Well, first of all, I was born into and raised into a matriarchal society. All of my marriages are matriarchal.
How many do you have?
Five.
Okay.
All of my lifestyle and culture is matriarchal, so I know whereof I speak. And what we do, of course, is understand or attempt to understand what life is on Earth. And if you look at indigenous people around the world, we have realized we're cursed with the power of reason as matriarchs. Therefore, we have to learn how to build our societies according to all of our relatives that surround us. So you don't see the bald eagle mate with the golden eagle, or the black widow spider mate with the scorpion, and on and on and on throughout life. And that's respect for life. And for our deep respect of life, intermarriage with any other, it's like what I told my daughters when they went off to college. I said, understand how you've been raised, and that is to respect who you are and to respect your future generations.
Now, does that mean that they would have to marry within your tribal family and not any other
tribal
family?
I don't come from
a
tribe, because tribes don't make treaties. I come from a nation,
all right,
a nation of people.
Does that mean that they would have to marry within your nation and not? If they marry, does that mean they would have to marry someone from your nation as opposed to any other nation?
If they respect their unborn generations, they will marry within the Lakota, which is my people. All right. Failing that, they would marry outside into the another American Indian nation.
All right. This is sort of what was
being... But not of the same clan.
This is what was being described, in a sense, by Ara, that there are some limitations when it comes close to home. Richard, you haven't been brought in on this discussion yet, and I'd like to bring you in now. Is there any difference in terms of your cultural experiences with regard to what we're discussing now?
No. Well, I'm still dealing with what Russell just said. It sounded to me, here we are in this year of the 21st century, listening to this conversation, and Russell sounds very much like what a white supremacist sounded like on television in the 1950s, where people talked about, you know, birds on a telephone line don't intermix and so forth. And so obviously the little blonde girl should not be dating the little black boy. This is, for me, so alien. I grew up in a society where, again, precisely because we didn't have a set identity within the American context when I was growing up, we were free to socialize with Chinese Americans.
Now, where did you grow
with
up?
With Indians.
Where?
In Sacramento, California.
All right.
With Indians, because my uncle was Indian. At that time, the immigration laws didn't allow the immigration of Indian women in large numbers, and so...
Well, wait a minute now, this is a contradiction of what you just said. First, you said that you grew up in a society that didn't preclude these mixings, these interracial groupings.
No, I'm talking about my familial society.
Oh, okay.
My familial
society. All right, let's be clear.
And there are towns in the Central Valley, for example, Yuba City, where a large number of Indian men from India married Mexican women, and in some sense, they were these societies of people who were adrift in California, found each other. That's the society I know, of people who really do not have a sense of belonging to the mass. In some sense, I'm tribal the way Russell is, but in exactly the opposite way. My tribe is with always, I've always been associated with and feel closest to people who don't belong, who don't have a sense of clear-cut identity.
Well, let me jump in and ask you this, all of you actually, isn't this really the root of what the problem is? Because we talk about our identity and our acceptance of multiculturalism and diversity, and as minorities, you would think that this is something that we would embrace necessarily. But when the rubber hits the road, to borrow Deborah's expression, we are no different, and that sometimes we don't want mixing in our own families when it's too close, when it's our daughter, when it's our sister, our brother. Is that not the case?
I think it's the same. It's as I said before, the conversation shouldn't end with whether or not, and Ara made this point, the conversation doesn't end with whether or not the people around you are comfortable with it. If you know who you are, you have to stand your ground. And if this is the, my family didn't bother objecting to my marrying a white man because they knew there'd be no point. I'm going to marry the person of my choice. I'm not right going to knuckle under to, you know, there's nothing wrong. If he was a drug addict, if he was a bad person, that's one thing. But the simple fact of his race, it just makes me a racist and it makes you a racist. And I have nothing to say to a racist. So, but just to say it, when my father is dead, he would have had a serious problem. So it's not like I would have gone whistling off. It would have, and I would try to be respectful. But at the end of the day, it's my life. The conversation just can't end with what other people around you are going to say. I think that in this march towards multicultural harmony, there has to be some courage on the part of the people who are leading the vanguard. You can't just wait until everything is nice and easy. And I have to say that I agree with Richard about Russell. I hear what you're saying. It comes across to me as suffused with a kind of superiority, you know, and a rejection of other cultures is not as good as your own. Is that what you were saying?
You know, it really gets to me when people don't listen. And that bespeaks about the American Indian, where, of course, we're relegated to primitivism, or in another word, tribalism. Richard has now compared me to a white supremacist. That is the last thing I've been called. I've been called a terrorist. I've been arrested for being a terrorist.
Now, just to be fair, Russell, that was with regard to your statement about race mixing, which is something.
No,
that,
but I prefaced it.
Well, but that's
and you're not listening. And neither is Deborah.
Oh, we're listening. Now you
okay,
have to be clear.
We can
clear.
Listen and disagree.
Right,
let me
talk. That's correct.
I talked about matriarchy, the universe, and life. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't understand matriarchy, then you don't understand what I'm talking about. And therefore, you have no respect for what I'm talking about.
That was American Indian activist Russell Means, along with Deborah Dickerson, Ara Han, and Richard Rodriguez. This rather controversial discussion on identity will continue tomorrow, where we left off.